from the Jethro's Barbecue Studios, where every Tuesday get 2-for-1 on the best wings in town.
Score!
This is Des Moines Sports Station, 106.3 KXNO. Keith Murphy.
This is a big, hairy American winning machine.
Andy Fales.
I got a guy on the other line about some white walls. I'll talk to you later.
It's the Murphy and Andy Show.
It's a three and got it!
Powered by AD.
British Young Cinderella.
On 1460 KXNO and now 106.3 FM.
It is the Murph and Andy Show on a Tuesday. Glad to have you with us here alongside Andy Fales. I'm Keith Murphy. It powered up by AD and sunny today, which is kind of nice despite the bitter cold. Leads us straight into a weather-related, possibly, depending on how you view it, quickie poll.
Which is the better month, January or February?
I like the way you frame this. You didn't say which is the worst month.
No.
But yeah, whichever you vote better month, you're choosing the other one as the worst month.
Apparently,
right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, by default.
Yeah. Better month. All right, let me, before we...
Yeah, because all the criteria here will be positive things, right?
Of course.
All right, let's start with January. With
we won't figure in which month is colder or which month is shorter.
Let's start with January and positives. New Year's Day. It's a good football day. Playoff games.
You typically get a bit of a springboard launch out of the holidays.
Yeah, it still kind of feels like
helps
holidays.
You a little bit. You're rested. You're a little more rested up. Tend to be.
National Football Championship. The college football semifinals. Mm-hmm. Some of the big bowl games. Got the NFL playoffs, which are
mm-hmm.
all but the Super Bowl, are in January.
Get into...
I'm going all football so far.
Really into the heart of the college basketball season.
Yep. Getting the conference schedule. Those of us who are fortunate to do so sometimes are able to take a little bit of time off in mm-hmm. January, although you could do that in February as well.
You get MLK Day off. A lot of people do. We do.
There's
another holiday. Mm-hmm.
Yep. There's mm-hmm. there's another day off. All right. Cases for February. Short.
That's it.
Again, we're only talking positives here, though, right?
Yeah. Short.
Super Bowl.
That's not positive.
Short meaning it's over with faster. That's a
Super Bowl.
It's a positive negative.
Yep. Spring, just around the corner. You're closer.
Yeah. If you live in Memphis.
March Madness, just around the
there
corner.
There you go.
Right. Okay, let me just make a ruling on this, and I think I do so from a position of authority, because my birthday is in January, and for a long time that has given January probably an unfair advantage, at least in my mind. February is the better month.
Okay. Well, congratulations on tomorrow.
Yeah, right. Yeah, to us all. February is the better month. January is colder. It's longer.
Wait, January is colder than February? Doesn't feel like it.
I think so. I think January is typically the coldest month of the year. You want me to look up the exact stats, but I'm going to guess that it is.
I want to hear from Ed.
It's the depths of the winter. It's darker. It's colder. It's longer. I think you get more precipitation. I'm going to guess.
You're going strong with your.
Okay, all right. Well, we're going to see which month is colder, January or February.
I'm going to vote better month January. I'm going to go against you here just for the sake of.
Why is that?
I think it is a peak, maybe not the best, but I think it's just a great month of watching sports. I mean, the NFL, the semifinals.
Coldest month
the
of the year
playoffs?
Is January.
Okay, you win.
Average low of 17 and high of 33. Average daily high. Yeah, below. Oh, man, it is. Yeah, it is definitely the coldest month of the year. February is cold too, though. There's no doubt. And by the time you get to February, you are really sick of the cold. In January, you're still. Maybe there's the novelty of the snow and
got
it's
a little
kind of
Christmas
fun.
Buzz going
yeah,
on.
A little
yeah,
bit
Christmas.
Of that. You're using your stuff.
AD, break the tie in the studio.
January's better.
January's better.
Yeah, I think January's better. It's you still got that holiday hangover. Lasts you a couple of weeks. February, it just is. You're just in winter. There's really nothing to look forward to.
Well, see, in February, you get the wrestling tournament. You get the girls' basketball tournament. We're talking sports here. We're talking locally. you're starting to feel the winter crack, right? And we're starting to move toward spring.
See, I don't feel that in February. February just feels like the dead of winter to
just,
me.
Yeah, well, it is. And especially here in Iowa, I mean, even March isn't a nice month by any stretch.
But. Although, hey, it's the sun doesn't set till like 5:30 now. So that's not so bad.
It is getting shorter every day this side of what, December 22nd. So February, there's more light.
Without further delay, let's get to the one at one.
The one at one.
One. One. One.
With Murph and Andy, powered by Kaburski Brothers Lawn Care.
Well, Cyclone fans know what's coming. It is tough to get over that loss from last night. It's one game. It's a long season. You know there are going to be nights where things fall apart or don't go the way you like, but that is a tough one. I just heard from one of my close friends who's an Iowa State alum and a huge basketball fan, and he's still mad today. I mean, he's like angry about this loss. He was texting me last night, and then today he's like, his text read, "I'm pissed. I can't get over." I mean, he's just mad about this game. I mean, Tech was winless in the conference, somehow still favored by 2.5, which mistakenly some people thought looked like free money. And that 2.5-point spread there would get some attention by the time this one was over, national attention. But Andy, this is as much as an individual game without a lot of far-reaching meaning can be, is just a punch to the gut, kick to the stones. I mean,
I agree with your friend. I mean, it was a really, really aggravating game to watch, the second half. It was a total meltdown on both sides of the floor for Iowa State. There was officiating that was maddening. There were, to be very honest, I did not understand what T.J. Otzelberger was doing. He knows a lot more about basketball than I ever will, but I don't know why Taman Lipsey was still on the floor. So I think people were openly yelling at their TV sets about that.
Well, he's had a good season as a true freshman. He looked like a freshman last night. He had a bad game.
He would not shoot. He was the only one open. He would not shoot, and he was turning the ball over again and again. Yeah. We love Taman Lipsey. We know that he's a better player than that. He had a bad game last night, and then he was
got into his head.
He looked like, you know, many of the times where we just saw Spencer Petras out there, you're just like, okay, this guy needs to be what it looked like to me. And I don't know what the situation is with his subs. I don't know.
They're thin at that position.
No doubt.
They lost someone right before. They lost a starter before the season started.
But he doesn't play the entire game every game. So you're wondering in that position where they're turning the ball over so much and he is just left wide open by the Texas Tech defense and allowing them to cover the other shooters even more, why he was still out there. And, you know, look, I mean, we watch as fans, we wonder aloud. There may be real legitimate answers to this but you don't know them at the time. Mm-hmm. So it's frustrating. But you know, I mean, it was one of those meltdowns where you watched it and I could see it beginning, you know, because they put back to back buckets together and then were getting some rebounds and getting some calls their way. And it starts rolling in their direction. And I'm thinking, gosh, could they possibly melt this down?
I didn't think it was possible.
And then I thought, okay, but I mean, that's 20 points. I think at that point that I was really questioning, it was like they were still leading by 20 points. Maybe it was 19 at that point. But I mean, it was a huge lead. And there were 12 minutes left, 11 maybe. And you think there's not enough time and it's too big a lead and Iowa State will snap out of this. At least enough to come away with the win. But as you started watching, I started thinking, this is resembling the Oklahoma State game.
Right.
But and only worse.
At halftime, Chris Williams of Cyclone Fanatic, he puts out a tweet, Iowa State's up 17. He's like, I don't want to be that guy, but this is a team that's blown two 20-point leads. Mm-hmm. And that seemed like, oh, come on. This is a team that hasn't won in the Big 12 conference. This is the last place team in, admittedly, a loaded Big 12. But it just didn't seem possible to me. And then the first time, and I'm anchoring the 9 p.m. and 10 p.m. news at this time, so I'm not watching every play. But the times I started worrying as I'm watching, it looks like Iowa State is trying to run the clock down before getting a shot up in the last few seconds of the shot clock, like trying to shorten the game. And that looked like the old, you know, prevent offense, going way too soon into the let's get this game over with instead of being aggressive and looking for a good shot. That started to worry. And then, you know, you just need – Caleb Grill was terrific from three-point land, but you need somebody who can – step up as like that star player in the big moment and make a shot when you have to have a shot. And I think Gabe Kalscher wants to be that guy, but he wasn't that guy last night.
No, he didn't have a good night, but he was covered very, very well.
He played every minute.
I mean, look, you know, you don't have to reach far for excuses in this game. I mean, Iowa State didn't play well, and Texas Tech, despite being 0-8 going into this game in the conference, I mean, that has been an elite program recently. They were just in the national championship game. They've made two Elite Eights in like the last 4 years. They've made three Sweet 16s in basically that same time. They have they're without Chris Beard, the coach that got them there, but it's still, he had built up the program to a point where it's got enough momentum to have a deep bench. They have not played well, and the crowd was really sparse, but for some reason, it made them a little bit louder. I mean, you could just really hear the giddiness in the crowd as things were starting to come apart for Iowa State. But I you know, and it was another reminder that as well as this team has played, that T.J. Otzelberger has gotten this team to play, I mean, what he has done is a minor miracle. They're very thin.
Yes.
That he has gotten, this team it has played way out over its skis.
And Jess Kuntz, their most efficient player, hadn't played for weeks. Now, he did warm up last night, so he's going to be back soon. And they'd lost their starting point guard before the season began. So you're right, the expectations changed.
Right. I mean, but fundamentally, this team is still really overachieving this year. I mean, and kudos to them. But when it comes right down to it in a game like this where you've just got to buckle down against a team that, you know, is playing for its life right now in the conference, boy, they suddenly looked thin. They looked like their offense couldn't create shots. And the defense, that was the most baffling thing. The defense looked like it had some cracks in it. I mean, defending the baseline suddenly became a really big challenge to them. And Tech just drove the hoop repeatedly.
Let's take a call from Jake. Then we'll get to the rewind here of the game. Hi, Jake.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Good. Hey, how are you?
Good. Hey, the biggest comparison I have for Iowa State right now is how can you afford to be a top 25 team or what, top 15 team, and you're shooting like 50% from free throws? Those are the easiest shots that are free to the team to try to have a non-contested shot for points and still expect to be a good team in that top 25.
Yeah, 12 for 21 from the line last night and 17 turnovers. That kind of tells the story. Thank you, Jake. We're going to go to the rewind now. Caleb Grill, who was questionable with back spasms, started the game and led the Cyclones to a big first-half lead.
Lipsy to Grill, a three by Caleb. Yes! Kick out, right corner three. Grill, good! Back-to-back threes for Caleb Grill, and the Cyclones lead at 15-7. Now Grill, three more. Good! Five first-half threes for Caleb Grill. Timeout, Texas Tech. 31-16. Caleb Grill has got it stuck on automatic.
That's John Walters, courtesy of Learfield, and that was fun. The guy hit his first five threes. And it's 39-22 at halftime. Iowa State up 17.
It looked like at that point that the decision to sit him at Missouri was genius. Like he looked really healthy in the first half. I mean, he looked like he had rejuvenated himself, obviously was shooting really well, but I mean, he just looked like a healthier player.
For much of the second half, more of the same.
20-point Cyclone lead and the basketball. Holmes to Grill, top of the circle three. Caleb got it! Caleb Grill with 7 threes in the game, 21 points.
Did you think that was going in?
Yes, 59-36 Iowa State.
23-point lead with 12 so minutes, that's the peak 30 right seconds there, to yeah. go. Yep, that's it. That's the 23-point lead, which ends up being a historic number, unfortunately, for Iowa State. Cyclones get sloppy with the ball, and Texas Tech makes Iowa State pay.
And now a steal by Tyson. Tyson driving, layup good, and it's 61-46. Throw between the circles, pass stolen by Tyson. Tyson driving, step through move, missed the shot, drew a foul, and he'll go to the free throw line and shoot two. And now he throws it away, and Washington a run out and a two-hand dunk. And another timeout called by T.J. Otzelberger at 63-56. This is Williams crossing over, driving along the baseline, layup good. Count the bucket for Damarian Williams at 69-66. Tyson over to O'Banner. Three right corner is good. A scramble three by O'Banner. And it's 71-69.
That three was a killer. Looked like Iowa State had gotten a hand on the ball before that.
Yeah, that
came out to the shooter.
That is a meltdown. So it's a tie game. After being up 23, tie game with 15 seconds to play, the Cyclones can still win it.
First time we've been tied since the opening tip. 71-71, 14 seconds to go in regulation. Lipsy, a standing dribble, 10 seconds. Down to 8 seconds. Lipsy's got to go to work, 6 seconds. Lipsy driving, leaves it for Kelscher. Gabe, right wing, 3 for the win. No, and we'll go to overtime. We'll go to overtime, tied at 71.
Man, so to overtime, Cyclones trail by 3 in the final seconds.
17 seconds. Here's Holmes racing ahead, driving all the way in, kicked it back out. Oshun hands to Grill. Caleb will fire a contested 3. No, but the rebound to King. Back out it comes. Holmes a 3 way on right. No. Rebound tipped out. And at the buzzer, Holmes for the tie. No. And that'll do it. And Texas Tech wins the basketball game. Iowa State got 3 threes at the end, couldn't get any of them down. And Texas Tech wins it 80-77 in overtime.
Well, at that point, you didn't think that those shots were going down. It was becoming that kind of scramble drill. And 80-77 is the final. T.J. Otzelberger on the final 12 minutes and the overtime.
That last 12 minutes was somewhat similar to what we experienced on Saturday in terms of pressuring us, taking us out of that rhythm where we're sharing the ball. And, you know, we're going to have to do a better job. We'll get back to the practice court and work on it, but we're going to have to drive people and attack closeouts. We're going to have to be more aggressive going into the paint. And then down there, we hang our head on our defense. And at the end of the day, you know, the crowd, the atmosphere, the environment, we just expect more in terms of guarding the dribble, not fouling and blocking out. And we weren't very good at it that last 12.
Was right.
Yeah.
He sounds calm, Andy, because he was
on the sidelines.
Yeah. He this is a teaching moment. They got to learn from this. It's the old cliche, you can't let this one loss turn into a bunch more losses. You got to get Taman Lipsy's confidence back. You got Kansas coming up on the schedule, so you got to get this turned around right away. I think the fans sound more despondent than TJ Otzelberger sounded, and there's good reason behind that. He can't let this in a long season be something they can't get past, and I don't think the Cyclones will be done in by one complete collapse. They've had a couple now, actually.
Well, and that's the problem. I mean, I think a lot of fans are looking at that. They're like, okay, that stupid Big 12 SEC challenge knocked us off our rhythm. Now we've got 2 losses. What's going to happen now? I mean, if you lose to Kansas at home, team that you nearly beat on their own floor, team that's had some lumps this season, I think that's absolutely what the fans start pointing to at this point. But, this was an aggravating game from so many different aspects in the second half. and I, you know, I do not blame fans for acting like fans about this. Mm-hmm. I mean,
it was hard to watch.
There were so many fouls called on Iowa State. So many. There was twice as many fouls called on Iowa State as Texas Tech. It looked like Texas Tech freely drove through to the hoop. And if Iowa State touched them at all, even there were a few plays that looked like they might be travels. And things just were not, they were not going there where the refs were not going to help them. So somebody was not coming in off the bench to help them. It was just like they were rolling with the guys that were out there on the floor, and those guys needed to somehow snap out of it, and it didn't happen. But, you know, a reminder, not that they needed one, but sometimes you do, of how tough this conference is and how much parity there really is from top to bottom, I mean, literally top to bottom in this conference, because the bottom just beat the top like that. Absolutely, you cannot let up one single half in one single game.
Biggest comeback in Texas Tech history. That's the greatest second half comeback in the history of the Big 12 or the Big 8. That's per ESPN stats. So if it felt like, man, this seems like a historic collapse, it was. And the Cyclones, interestingly, they're better right now against the best teams in the Big 12 than some of the weaker teams in the Big 12. But it's like last season. There are going to be fits and starts in this schedule, and we'll see how Iowa State recovers. Big game coming up soon. So the Iowa State football schedule is out, and a couple of years ago when this happened, I didn't think we would still see Oklahoma and Texas on Iowa State's football schedule, but we do.
Yeah, both are there.
Yeah, they're both there. We'll tell you who's out of the schedule, because remember, there are four teams coming in, so some of the teams have to leave the schedule. You're no longer going to play everybody in the Big 12. We'll have that for you when the Murph and Andy show returns, but it's time for another $1,000 slam dunk. You go to kxno.com, enter the nationwide keyword cash. That's cash at kxno.com. Just had a $1,000 winner on the drive.
Yeah, John Shrimp from Ankeny won last night.
Way to go, Ankeny. $1,000 from the drive with Heather and Sean. And we'll be right. Valley West Mall.
It's Murph and Andy's Play of the Day, powered by Prairie Meadows.
Rebound. Texas has it. That's going to do it. The Longhorns will take the first of the series for the Bears this year. Texas is 7-2 at the halfway point in conference play, and they're tied for first place in the Big 12 Conference. They beat the Baylor Bears tonight, 76-71.
Visit PrairieMeadows.com for information. It's fun you can bet on.
All right, the Big 12 finally releases its football schedules. It's happened within the hour here, and this isn't something we usually go over, but we have a unique circumstance because one of the things that I and many of you have loved the most about Iowa State and the Big 12 schedules is you played every team in your conference. Well, that's about to change because the Big 12 is actually going to have 12 teams, but to my surprise, is still going to have 14, it appears, for next football season. I always thought that some deal would be made to release Texas and Oklahoma from their obligations to get to the SEC, but it's so much money. Apparently nobody, including ESPN, wanted to put up that money. So,
and today was some sort of deadline for that. So I think that's why they had waited this long to put out this football schedule, because I think up until today, Oklahoma and Texas could have gotten out, and I think now they're locked in through this next season.
So here is the schedule. This was known September 2nd at Jack Trice Stadium against the Northern Iowa Panthers, and then the next week against the Iowa Hawkeyes at Jack Trice Stadium. First two games in Ames. And then a reminder, the game against Ohio, which sounds like it would be at Jack Trice Stadium. We're talking about the Bobcats, but that game is in Athens, Ohio. So that was a home and home. That's September 16th. Now we get into the Big 12 schedule. Oklahoma State at Jack Trice Stadium. And then, and this wasn't certain, even with Oklahoma still in the conference, Iowa State will go to Oklahoma September 30th. Then TCU, fresh out of the national championship game, will go to Jack Trice Stadium October 7th. And then Cincinnati, new to the Big 12, the Bearcats, October 14th. That is in Cincinnati.
First meeting ever between the two.
Bearcats and Cyclones. And then to Waco the following week to take on Baylor. That's October 28th. And then Kansas at Jack Trice Stadium, November 4th. The protected rivalry, or whatever the Big 12 calls it, with BYU. That's in Provo, Utah, November 11th. Where's Provo? How far from Salt Lake City is that? I don't know Utah very well.
Uh-huh, right.
Okay, and then...
I don't think it's too far away. Like, all the people that live in Utah are, like, in one strip. Yeah, right.
November 18th, a final game with Texas. That'll be in Jack Trice Stadium, November 18th. And then November 25th. Is this after Thanksgiving? It would be, right?
It'd be that weekend after Thanksgiving.
So no, that's Kansas State, and that is in Manhattan, Kansas.
Yeah, Thanksgiving is Thursday the 23rd, so Saturday the 25th will be that weekend.
So final home game for Iowa State against Texas on November 18th, and then right after Thanksgiving to Kansas State. These times are all to be announced based on television streaming and whatnot.
Provo about... 45 minutes to the south of Salt Lake City.
I'm from Provo, Utah. You got you see that semi jackknifed out on the Santa Ana? Woo!
He was talking about, he went, you talking about Fletch?
You should see my shoes.
Fletch flew out to Utah.
Oh, did he fly to Provo?
He went out to Utah because that's where Alan Stanwyck was from, and his parents were there, Ethel. Or what were their names? Like
he had
Marvin and Ethel.
Alan had a couple of families. Marvin and
Ethel Stanwyck. Yeah, yeah. His parents were out there with a pig farm. He went out there. Just to the south there on Utah Lake.
Utah.
Yeah, Utah Lake. So this is a year of interesting road trips for Cyclone fans.
Yeah.
Cyclones to Athens, Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
To Cincinnati for the first time. To Provo for the first time.
that's not a quick drive.
No, that's...
Is Iowa State the closest team to BYU in the Big 12?
I guess
probably.
Maybe Kansas State, probably.
Manhattan will probably be slightly closer. Mm-hmm. So wait, so no Texas Tech, no West Virginia.
Yeah, Texas Tech and West Virginia are off the schedule.
And then also no Houston or UCF.
Right.
The other newcomers.
Have to wait another year.
Nice
for
to
those.
Make Texas come up here for a November game, though. One last time. One last cold weather game for the Longhorns.
Yeah, that's great.
You know, they looked at that and like, oh, man.
Yeah, no UCF. You would go to Cincinnati. If you're going to take a road trip, you probably prefer UCF, like Orlando.
So if you're Iowa State, Houston. You just got to make BYU your rival. You just have to make up a rivalry.
Oh,
flock to Provo.
Hey, that's a road trip too, man. Yeah, just go ahead and leave now if you want to go see them play in BYU. All the way through Nebraska.
Oh.
The long way, not like the going to Denver way. You like all the way through it like you're going to Yellowstone. All the way through Wyoming.
What how do you get that rivalry going? Just insults like
16 hours and 51 minutes.
Your mom drinks Mountain Dew.
Yeah, right. Yeah, just, how do you insult Mormons? Is that what you're saying?
Good,
how do you insult them?
Good, get clean under the living.
Skin? You could probably bring up the polygamy thing. They're always sensitive about that.
I'd rather not bring that up. Former Cyclone quarterback Brock Purdy, as feared, tore his UCL, which I have really struggled to not add A each time I say this on the air, tore his UCLA. You know, you just get used to the letters start to come and the muscle memory.
Yeah, or like, you know, we're so used to the MCL or the ACL or the PCL. UCL is not one that we talk about much.
Yeah, he tore his UCL in the right elbow, and he is seeking second opinions, and as you would, as you should. The preliminary report from Adam Schefter reported the NFL Insider with ESPN that Purdy would be out 6 months. Now, that would be in time for training camp. It certainly seems optimistic for what the NFL Network calls a complete tear. He is trying to avoid Tommy John reconstruction. Tommy John reconstruction, most commonly associated with pitchers in Major League Baseball, that would mean he'd probably miss the season. But obviously trying to avoid that. Is it Addix?
Yeah, Addix.
Addix. Dr. Mark Addix from Harvard on the Dan Patrick Show.
Everybody kind of wants to say, oh, maybe it's just partial. You know, they're hoping that the next doctor will tell them they don't need surgery. I mean, looking at the hit, looking at his absolute inability to throw the ball, it looks to me like he needs surgery. He needs Tommy John surgery. And, you know, it generally is a year. You know, I mean, Steven Strasburg came back in a year in baseball. We had Jake Delhomme came back in just over a year, actually. He was hurt in week three and then came back the following season, had probably his best year after he had Tommy John. So it's not that I don't think he'll be able to come back and play well. It's just that it may completely make next season not an option.
I said that yesterday, Doc, and then I saw the update. It's like, oh, he could be back right before the start of training camp.
You know, I don't think you're throwing, you know, 50-yard bombs, 60-yard bombs with an elbow 6 months after the surgery. You know, I mean, it takes about 3 months to heal. And, you know, I mean, every now and then you'll see a baseball player come back in 9 months, and they're like, oh, my gosh, can you believe it? This guy came back. I mean, that's just, you know, knocking it out of the park to come back after Tommy John in 9 months. And I do think that that's possible. 6 months would make him pretty miraculous. And, you know, I'm unfamiliar with someone being able to play quite that soon.
Yeah.
Well, so this is speculation. This is not Brock Purdy's doctor talking here. But it would appear from the reporting at the NFL Network and at ESPN that Purdy is hoping to repair the UCL, the ligament, without doing a complete reconstruction, because if he does Tommy John surgery, there's no way he's back for training camp.
Yeah, and boy, just looking at things from the 49ers perspective, I mean, here they were thinking, okay, finally, we're going to have a year, an offseason, where we're in a position of strength with the quarterback position, where we've got more answers than questions.
Yeah,
they really thought that this was going to be the year that was all going to change, because they've had question marks at that position for quite a while. And what do they do now?
Yeah, Jimmy Garoppolo is a free agent who also has been injured. Trey Lance coming off surgery,
a lot of money. Yep.
And still hasn't
proven.
Don't
know what you've got in Trey Lance at all. Yeah,
that he could lead a team to a Super Bowl win. Purdy was really terrific in his 8 games, but This is serious. I feel like also something that has not gotten enough attention, because in some circles, like with Reggie Bush, who was completely out of line. I mean, Brock Purdy went back into the game with a completely torn UCLA because the 49ers did not have any options. I mean, that's you got to respect him for that. I mean, he's out there. He can't throw. Mm-hmm. He even did throw 2 passes, short passes, but he can't.
What did Reggie Bush say? Tough it out?
Yeah, tough it out, throw it downfield, put a brace on it, you know.
Put a brace.
Do
just
something.
Just randomly pick up a brace.
Just do something.
Fitted by a doctor.
Find a way to get it done. And then he pointed out like a couple of players who were. Oh, he pointed out Patrick Mahomes was playing on a bad ankle.
Well, that's not his throwing arm.
Yeah,
though.
This is a quarterback's UCL. Yeah. Torn, completely torn. And I think most of us...
He was out there doing everything that he could.
Yeah, he can't throw the ball downfield when you're missing a ligament.
Yeah, and the problem is the defense knows exactly what to do to counter that. I mean, they just play the run no matter what. So whether he's handing it off or pitching it out, or he's going to run it himself, I mean, they're still playing the run. They didn't have a pass option.
Don't want to make this a talking point on this show, and it won't be, but... Should the 49ers consider the long speculated swan song for Tom Brady? Like, he comes back, you know, he grew up a 49ers fan, season tickets in the upper deck. Montana was his hero. He's always dreamed of playing for the 49ers.
I think they should consider that and Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah.
But the difference is you can just sign Brady. For Rodgers, you're going to have to give up some stuff.
Well, then give up Trey Lance.
Jordan Love and Trey Lance.
Yeah,
two question marks.
Well, young quarterback.
Well, I mean, the Packers, look, I mean, they that's, do that's currency. Young yeah. quarterback is yeah. currency right now. I mean, look, there are a lot of reasons to feel the need to strike while the iron's hot right now. I mean, they have Christian McCaffrey.
They've got a team.
They have one of the best left tackles in football. They have got a great defense. They're going to lose their coordinator again, but I mean they're ready. I mean they've got Deebo Samuel, he's healthy. I mean they've got George Kittle. They're ready. They're a quarterback away.
So bummed for Brock because I think he really did play his way into being the guy that would go into next season.
That way they could buy a little bit of time. But look, you in Brady and Rodgers, you've got two California guys who you know can step right in. And yeah, maybe look, and there are other teams that have this exact same idea, so it's not going to be as easy to just sign them. But absolutely, I would have both of those options on the table.
Brady had, personal problems. He lost 15 pounds from stress and whatnot. He certainly didn't play. He didn't look like himself this season. Still set the NFL record for attempts and completions. He can still play, but he would probably fit right in with the 49ers. I hope somehow Brock Purdy can be back by training camp and maybe have a shot at being the starter. But, well, you hear that doctor and you just think, like, well, maybe that's asking for a little too much. Chris, you have a thought on BYU as a rival for Iowa State?
Yeah, it's going to be a good rivalry, excuse me, but it's a bit farther than Colorado. It's about a 1,000-mile drive because when I was younger, I used to drive out there to visit my parents in Las Vegas, and I could only make it to Evanston, Wyoming. So it's more than a day drive unless you have two drivers. And
why do you think it's going to be a good rival for Iowa State? I mean, time it's going to develop? Because right now I don't see there being anything.
Yeah, that could be. But over time it will develop. And they've been competitive as of late. They may have had some down years after Lavelle Edwards retired. But I think it could develop. There's going to be some close games and some shootouts.
All right. Thank you, Chris. Appreciate that. And we'll be back with Throwdowns.
Oh, fearlessly.
It's time for Throwdowns on the Murph and Andy Show.
Let's throw it down, Andy. We're 25 hours away from Kirk Ferentz's signing day press conference, where he will certainly be asked about his son, offensive coordinator Brian Ferentz. Do you expect a news drop about a change coming to Iowa's coaching staff before tomorrow afternoon's press conference?
Jeez. If you had asked me this several weeks ago, yeah, I think I'd have a different answer. But, I mean, I hope so. I'm going to have to say no. I mean, just on personal experience, we have seen him make sizable announcements at this press conference. I feel like that's only just a little too big to kind of throw in there as a side note on a press conference on a different subject. But I'm going to say no. Maybe we'll still hear something before the season, but I don't think before this press conference, no.
I do. I think there's going to be a release of some reshuffling of the coaching staff. I don't think it's going to be, some drastic bombshell, but as somebody who likes and respects Kirk Ferentz, I hope he does, because I think it'd be better for him. I think it'd be better for the football program. I think it's better for Brian, both for his health, his happiness, everything. I think sometimes you need to make a change. It's better for all involved. And this wouldn't be doubling down. This would be like tripling down at this point. And I just don't see that as being good for anybody involved, even with a new talented quarterback. But there are reasons to lean toward what Andy's saying here in that, we're going to be in February and there hasn't been a whisper of a change. So we'll see. We'll see.
Murph, in Iowa State's last four conference games, they've had two wins over top 10 teams and two losses where they've given up big leads. Which jump out at you more, the wins or the losses?
This could be recency bias, but right now it is the losses because they just got away from the fundamentals of winning basketball, and that may not be a fair answer because the wins are certainly impressive, but I've seen Iowa State teams time and time again win in Hilton Coliseum when you didn't expect a win against a top team going all the way back to the Johnny Orr era. I haven't seen collapses of this magnitude, so that stands out a little more to me.
Yeah, it's recency bias here. I mean, we're so impressed with this team. There's no doubt, but we've gotten used to that, right? I mean, we've come to expect this team to continue winning, and we're reminded in these losses that they're thin, definitely, still playing with some house money, but also they are capable of losing their focus and losing their edge when they get a big lead here. You know, a lot of this is just being in an opposing gym. I think if they're even on neutral ground, there's no way this happens. Certainly doesn't happen in Hilton Coliseum. But away from home, when they get away from their game and they see an opponent that suddenly starts seeing a spark, they're not able to stop the Avalanche right now. And that's what's weighing more on my mind at this point.
Andy, Iowa Nice is a real thing, but do you practice it? Let me give you a scenario. You're walking down the street, you're alone. Someone else is walking towards you, they're alone. Do you interact with that person, or do you just walk on by?
I usually say hello. I do. I mean, sometimes I try to, maybe being even more Iowa Nice, I try to look at them and see what their situation is, if they look like they're open to a hello. If I'm even paying that much attention to them, I mean, we're all so distracted these days. But, yeah, I feel a little awkward just passing someone and not saying hello. I don't know if that's Iowa Nice or my own insecurities.
Yeah, it's a nod or a hello or a smile or something. Yeah, I do that, and I feel like it's done. I think it is Iowa Nice, Midwest Nice, whatever you call it. I mean, I'm always... Whenever I'm in Florida and I go through a toll booth, I just think, man, what happened to saying hello to somebody? So it can be different.
Like, that never existed down here.
It can be different in other states. So yeah, let's be nice to each other as much as we can. Andy's right. I'm not batting 100 on this because sometimes you're distracted, or batting 1,000. I guess would be the case.
If you look at them and they're kind of looking away, or they're not going to, you know, it's okay. I'll let them be. But yeah, I always try to give I noticed last night I was driving around in my neighborhood, and it's like I wave to everybody I see. Because it's like, well, I don't know who that is, but they're in my neighborhood. We're neighbors, right?
Sometimes you can disarm, like, even somebody mean mugging with just like a hi. Yeah. They'll be like surprised. Oh, hey, how's it going? Hour two of the Murph and Andy Show is coming up next here on 106.3 KXNO. We'll get it started with Trending Iowa. We're glad you're with us here on a Tuesday.